Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's March 9th, 2012. You're listening to the best PokerCast in the world. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long. Chris, the biggest problem, I think... We talked last week. There's not much poker on TV anymore, though Poker After Dark's coming back, so maybe there's a resurgence, right?
Yeah.
But we've gone a long time here without poker on TV, right? Or a lot of it, at least to the extent that we used to have it.
Well, yeah. In other words, it's not every other channel anymore.
Right,
yeah.
Right. And so I think what's going on here is that fictional TV shows are trying to fill the void. By writing poker into their storylines, and we know how that goes, right?
Yeah.
How many times on the show have we laughed about, it's a taxi, and it's a MASH, and other ones. I thought about this this week because, our good friend David Bloomberg wrote in about watching an episode of Criminal Minds.
Criminal Minds.
Recently, and I just think these shows are going 37 kinds of crazy on poker now. And it's nothing that's new. I mean, we talked about this before. Don't these people have, technical consultants that can... I mean, we're not talking rocket science here. It's not like trying to build a space tunnel.
Got to save every dime, I guess. Save every dime you can.
It's just posting your big blind correctly. How hard is that, you know? But anyway, I thought it was funny that David wrote in, and then I also saw one myself. So this is what David said about Criminal Minds. Now, I've seen Criminal Minds, like, once, you know... or twice, whenever I'm at my parents', because I think that's the only people to watch this. It's on CBS, so you have to be like 80 years old to watch it anyhow, right? And it was captivating, I'll give it that. It's like all these cop shows, it's captivating. But he tried to bite his tongue because there were a couple of few nitpicky things at the beginning of the show, but he let those go. But he said all sense of reality fell apart the more he watched. So I guess the storyline was there's this million-dollar winner-take-all tournament, right?
Yeah, tournament.
So he said that one FBI agent staked a super smart FBI agent in the tournament and said, quote, "Try not to lose all my money." Dave says, dude, it's a tournament. He'll lose it. He'll either lose it all or win it all. There's no in-between.
Well, what if it's a rebuy?
Oh, that is true. See?
Maybe they're getting way technical on us, and David wasn't able to follow that storyline.
Oh, very good. You're shooting holes in it already. I like it. All right, he goes on. He says, except the winners think there is, because when they start playing, they're talking about the chips as if they're real money denominations. All right, I'll give him a pass on that. And we talk about dollars instead of units, right?
But, yeah.
He says, but indeed, when the killer is spotted, he grabs as many as he can and runs off. Which would be pointless if they were tournament chips. When I thought about this, I thought about, when we were joking in the home game about if we ever got raided, our little, two-skittle, four-skittle friendly game that we have, and I made a joke about how I'd grab all the chips, and Vasa was like, oh, hey, you can have all the chips you want. I'm grabbing the money.
I'm grabbing the money, exactly.
It's exactly the same thing here. And then he said, also, when the agent comes in, he just sits down at a random table. Boy, wouldn't we all like to do that? But then he spots the likely suspect and asks a cocktail waitress if he can move, and she lets him.
And I bet you didn't even tip her a dollar.
Probably not. And that, I thought about this, too. I'm like, I can see Chris Cosenza walking into the Foxwoods tournament, and you know what? Hey, Joni, can I move over to the table over there? And she's like, I don't know. Do you remember me? Let me give you a tip, Chris. No, I'm not going to move you to that table over there.
Oh, my God.
Oh, man. Wouldn't that be great if the cocktail waitresses doubled as the floor people? See, that's amazing cost savings for poker rooms here.
I could just say, now, floor, and then when she comes over, you're like, yeah, okay, so this guy raised out of position. It wasn't his that turn to act. And then, can you bring my Bloody Mary while you're at it?
So we laugh, but I think it's amazingly efficient.
It is.
We can get her to deal cards, too. Just think of the poker economy money we'll save here.
Oh, my God.
Now, the other one that I watched, and a lot of listeners are watching, too, there's a little bit of discussion on the forum, but not much. But there's a brand new show called Luck on HBO. Mm-hmm. And I'll preface it by saying it's nowhere near as funny as Criminal Minds here. So we got the funny part out first, but... But I'm slowly catching up on this. I really want to watch it all. I just, you know, you got Survivor and, you know, you got all kinds of stuff to watch. I don't have enough time. But I'm trying to catch up. I'm only two episodes in, but there's this one character on this, on the show, Chris, that has a penchant for playing poker, and is that the Hustler?
Oh.
So I assume the Hustler paid some kind of fee or something to, you know, because their logo's all over the table and stuff. So, and it's filmed there. It's really cool, you know, because obviously we've been there. Yep. I'm like, hey, I've been there.
Yeah.
So this is playing at the Hustler, and on this episode, which I think was the second in the series, I started chuckling, because, first of all, this guy sucks, all right?
Okay.
He's just not cut out for the poker world. He seems to always get lucky at the horse races and then dumps all the money at the table, right?
Yeah.
And it's all, as we all do, he has a nemesis at the table that he just can't beat. All right? It's like Dr. Frank for me.
Yeah.
And on this episode, he's in a hand, right? And they're doing the stare down and blah, blah, blah. And then next thing I know, this sucky player is opening the trunk of his car in the parking lot and taking out a few bundles of high society out of his bag. Oh, like spare tire and stuff.
Right.
And I'm like, oh, man, he lost again. Now he's reloading. And then the camera shows him he's right back at the table. And there's this tuxedoed floor man. And he's like... I'm announcing a one-time-only decision by mutual agreement of both remaining players in the hand to allow more money to be added to the table in the middle of the hand. So this wasn't separate things. The guy was in a hand, and he's like, time out. I'm going to run out to the car. I'm going to get some money out of the Pinto. Hang on. I'll be right back. Gets the money, brings it back, puts it on the table. They give him chips. And then the floor says, all right, yeah, if you guys want to add more table, are you good with that? Oh, yeah, sure, I'm good. Okay, good. We'll make a one-time-only exception to the rule. Now, what's even funnier about this is so everybody agrees, right? And then the sucky player shoves all in and turns over pocket kings, and there's an ace and a queen on the board. And, of course, his opponent turns over ace-queen for aces up. And then, of course, it's Hollywood, right? So he spikes a king on the river, and, you know, he's rich beyond his... He finally felted his nemesis here. And then, of course, the announcer says, announces the players that they're resuming normal rules now. Well, that's good. I was worried that, you know, they're just going to make blanket change there. People were going to say, you know what? I like that rule. Let's keep that.
Oh, man. Well, you said that wasn't going to be funny. That was hilarious.
I guess it's not as... comical, I mean, as exaggerated as the Criminal Minds, but yeah, can you imagine that?
Man, well, you know, I found something just as funny last night on TV, flicking through the channels. NBC Sports had the Poker After Dark on, and yeah, there were Full Tilt Poker logos everywhere.
That is funny.
Now, I know that there's an explanation as to why they're on the old episodes running them, but the newer ones won't, but I'm just like, it's still jarring. You know, it's jarring to see Dwan and Ivy and Huckseed wearing the logos last night. I almost lost my lunch. It's just so jarring to see that. But it was on. I watched a little bit of it, and then after I was done tweeting about it. By the way, you should follow us at Antiup Magazine. Just Antiup Magazine, right? At Antiup Magazine. I'm slowly but surely catching Scott. I have over 1,500 now.
You're only 100 behind me on my Facebook. Yep. So like us at facebook.com/AntiupMagazine.
I'm like 95 away now, buddy. I got 5 more this morning, so I'm catching you.
All right, well, I just want to, you know, let the home game folks know that the next game, if I get up and walk out to my trunk of cars, I have pocket kings, and I know that I'm going to spike it on the river. So.
Well, you know, the good thing is the car you drive doesn't really have a trunk, does it?
That's true, yeah.
Is that where your engine is?
Yeah, I can put some coins in the coin. All right, well, we also got this email a couple weeks ago, and it's a very simple email, but I think it's good to put on the show to kind of remind us. Every once in a while, we need to be reminded of the basics, right, Chris?
Yeah, of course.
All right, so this comes from Eric Brenham, and he wrote in with his observations on that No Limit Omaha 8 Hand of the Week that we had a few weeks back, right?
I wish he was there when we were actually doing it. You know, 2020 is the hindsight. You know, I mean, I wish he was there when we were doing it right away. That'd be great. Have Eric sitting right next to me trying to do that crap. That's not easy, man. Not easy.
Oh, man. Well, he went through his own observations, as we often do. We get, emails from folks that kind of break down the hand. But he ended with this, and this is what I want to bring up. Quote, I don't fundamentally disagree with either the way the player played the hand or the way either of you played or analyzed the hand. I just know that in my game, I make more money my way and manage losses better my way.
Well, I'm pretty sure that Eric is sort of a pen name for Scott Long. Because that's all Scott ever talks about when we're on the show. He's like,
Frank Sinatra, yeah.
Look, this is the way I like to play the short stack, okay? You may not work for you, but it works for me. That's just the fancy way of saying what Scott says all the time.
See, and I'm reinforcing my beliefs in the nation by using a puppet.
But he's right. He's right. You know what works for you and what works for your game, and he's more privy to, you know, their tendencies and whatever than we are. So, you know, we're doing it from a black and white, cold basis and from the information given to us. But, yeah, I agree with him. I think what works for you is what works for you, and maybe you're a good player, maybe you're not, and it just depends on – and when I say you, I mean people in general, not Eric.
Right.
That's a good point.
This is kind of like the I think where we break down on the forum sometime in these debates is when people get absolutely, you have to play it this way.
Yeah.
No, you don't.
No.
You don't. There's other ways to play it. And Eric thankfully reminded us.
All right, our hotline, 813-448-1120 is picking up some steam, but we have another repeat here from Mr. No Swag. Always happy when he calls in.
Because we don't have to give any swag.
We don't have to give him anything. But you know, if you call in and we use it for the first time in over a year, we'll give you something cool. But let's see what he has to say.
Good afternoon, Annie Up. This is Mr. No Swag. Just wanted to give you a buzz and tell you I'm listening to the current episode. And Epic Poker, of course, has a little bit of news, but I can't speak for the rest of your listeners, but, you know, man, just cover the highlights and move on, because we really don't care, because we'll never play in that league. Thank you. Just my opinion. Have a good one. Bye.
Well, I have to disagree with him, and not because...
You have to disagree. You can play it your own way.
Yeah. Here's the deal. It's not so much that we would never participate in this league, but it is on television. And that's, I mean, people like to watch TV on poker, as you see what Luck and Criminal Minds are trying to do. So, I mean, for me, I want the league to survive for a lot of reasons. I think it makes poker, people show up to watch it in these rooms, wherever it's being played, and they'll show up on TV to watch it, and then we get to learn about who the better players are, and they become better as they, you know, qualify for this league or whatever. I mean, I don't think that, you know, we should just gloss over it because we can never play in it. You know, there's a lot of things happening out there that we can never participate in, but we have to report on the show because that's what we do.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's part of the poker economy, even beyond the TV. I mean, I think that's a great, great argument you made, but it's part of the poker economy, so it's important to do to discuss at some point. Obviously, anything you can belabor the point. Not that we're ever guilty of belaboring any points, but I mean, I guess the other thing too is I kind of like when we get calls like this. Because it assumes that we know what all of our individual listeners are thinking.
Yeah.
It's almost like we have a little... Wouldn't it be great if, like, you know, 50 years from now, or, you know, probably 3 years if Apple does it, they come up with some way where it's a choose-your-own-adventure podcast. We could, like, scream at it, no, don't talk about Epic, and then you and I will go, all right, thank you, Mr. No Swag. We will move on now. And then somebody else is like, no, don't leave now. We want to talk more. Okay, we will talk more about Epic.
So for some people, the show lasts 6 minutes.
Exactly.
And other people, it lasts, you know, 3 hours. Go back to that again. I want to hear that again.
Sorry, Mr. No Swag.
You probably didn't notice it because the accent is so good.
Well, I'm liking that you're branching out with a different sound with your imitations, because everything else usually just sounds like your father.
Yeah. Well, that's the robot from Rocky IV.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Happy birthday, Polly.
All right, Mr. Noseway, we always like you calling in, keeping us on our toes. And, of course, you know, obviously, it's unfortunate that your mother named you that. so we're not able to give you swag. But everybody else, call in at 813-448-1120. We might send you something cool like a deck of J-Design playing cards, official playing cards of Anti-Up. Pick up your own decks in the Anti-Up store at antiupstore.com.
All right, the mailbag this week is from Scott Wagner. He says he's been playing No Limit Hold'em for about 6 months. He counted cards in blackjack until his local casino went to 8 decks. Doesn't that always just kill it for you?
Yeah.
You can't just count for the 2 cards anymore, you know.
Well, I mean, I don't want to pick on our listeners. I'm already picking on Mr. No Swag, but, you know, a real blackjack counter can count with 16 decks. You know, I'm just saying. You don't have the skills.
He says, so when I'm playing cards, I'm a very tight player. I was about break even until my last 4 sessions. The issue I'm having is I have a total of 15 to 20 hours of table time in 1-2 No Limit. $200 buy-in, and it's a $300 max. During this entire stretch, I have not flopped anything over a pair. I have not even made any cards on the turn or the river. No joke. Every hand I've played or folded has lost. After about 3 hours into my first losing session, I started to pay attention, asking myself, what the heck is going on? How common is it to go to this long without a winning hand?
Oh, boy. I can't answer you, Scott, because I've been on a longer losing streak than you have.
So you're still waiting to come around with the winning hand.
Yes, I have never won a hand of poker, ever. all right, I guess I'll take the first crack at it. I'm sure you've got some even better stuff to say. But
not really.
You know, it's a sample size problem here, right?
Yeah.
It seems unlikely that it could happen this, but it's not out of the realm of possibility, right?
Yeah.
You know, at some point, this is going to correct itself, and then you're going to go on a 4-week heater where you can't lose. And I guarantee you, you're not going to call us or write us and say, hey, I've been hitting everything for 4 weeks. It's when you lose is when you're a little heightened on it. So, but that's not really what he's asking. He's asking how common. I would say this is fairly rare, but it's not rare like Colorado bison. Rare. You ever had that? I had that on Laura's birthday. Tasty animal.
No, I've never had bison.
And you have to get it rare too. They don't give it to you medium rare. You have to get it rare.
I think that Scott may subscribe to the same theory of every time I fold deuce seven, it comes out deuce seven on the flop. That kind of thinking, and because it's that kind of thinking that always hits you when you're on a losing streak.
Right.
You know, and I have to say that I noticed this, and tell that dog to shut up. I noticed this happening to me when I played online. Every once in a while, I would have a situation where I would literally raise with ace king and miss the flop, and, you know, for 500 consecutive times, I'm getting ace king. So I know exactly what he's saying, and it does feel like it's forever. It's probably not as long as he's making it out to be. But I think it's common to feel that way. I don't know if I've ever actually gone 15 to 20 hours without making one hand. I think that's impossible. But yeah, I understand.
It's not impossible.
Well, I know, but we're talking about literally you could – it's more rare than hitting a royal flush than to
that's
not make
correct.
A pair for 15
that's
to 20
correct.
Hours. You're going to hit every two out of three flops. Okay.
Huh? If you could prove to the room that you played 20 hours without winning a hand, you win, you know, a hat or a jacket or something.
It's difficult, let's just say, to go through the stretch that he's going. But he says over a pair, so obviously he's flopped pairs. He's just never flopped trips or two pair or straight or something.
Right,
so
that's
still difficult to do, though.
Very difficult.
I feel for you. I have empathy. You know, just work your way through it. I'm not really giving him any advice because he's not asking for advice. He just wanted to know.
No, he said it's not rare, and I think we've answered. And hang in there. It's going to turn around. I mean, you know.
We've all been there.
Yep. All right. Well, you know, in the meantime, we are going to be happy to send you a t-shirt from PMS Pokerware, which sells hilarious shirts for gals and guys in the Anti-Up store at antiupstore.com. And we'll see if we can make a shirt. I played 20 hours, never won a hand. All right. I played 20 hours and all I got was this lousy t-shirt. But it's not really a lousy t-shirt because it comes from PMS Pokerware, a trusted Annie Up sponsor.
Nice save.
And everybody else, remember to email us your mailbag, Floor's Hands of the Week, to podcast@annieupmagazine.com.
All right. We have a call to Floor this week. Would you like to read it?
Sure, I'll read it.
Okay.
Then that means you get to read the answer.
Yeah, I'll read the answer.
All right, comes from Jeff Hayashi. He's emailed us before, and now he's got a little pickle here with the call floor, and Jody will be happy to help him out. He says, for 99% of the rules, it is up to the dealer to call rules infractions upon the players and enforce the rules. However, there is one exception, and that is string raises. In every room that I have played in, the dealer and floor personnel say it's up to the player or players involved in the hand to enforce this rule. Why do they rule this way for string raises? Most floor personnel and dealers will comment to the fact that another player may want the player to raise and therefore does not want the dealer to rule on the air.
Hmm. All right, well, here's what Jody said. Different rooms have different rules on this one. The TDA rules require the dealers and players alike to police the situation in tournaments. In cash games, it isn't uncommon for rooms to require the players to keep an eye on it. California is the only state I have encountered that is consistent with this approach in most rooms. Most of the other places I've encountered do require dealers to call string bets in smaller games to protect their recreational players. In really big games, the players do like to allow players to put in string bets when it is to their benefit, and they certainly don't appreciate the dealer or floor person cutting down on their profit. This isn't right in my opinion, but it is how it works in some places. Yeah, I don't think I've ever seen... I've never had that situation happen where a string raise got to stay.
No, never.
I've never seen that. But again, I haven't seen it very often because the players are much more educated these days, unless they're angle shooters or something. Most of the time, when I go through entire sessions for months without even seeing somebody trying to do it by accident. And when it does happen, I have almost always think I've seen a dealer catch it. So when I read that the first time when it emailed into us, I was like, wow, really? I never heard of that. So he thought everyone does that, and I thought no one ever does that. So
yeah, which is great. This is why we like to call the floor, because it opened our eyes to the fact that this happened somewhere and opened his eyes to the fact that it doesn't happen everywhere else. So
right.
It must be regional. I mean, I don't know where Jeff is from. I don't remember if he said, but obviously Jody says California is an exception. So if you play in California, maybe this is common out there.
Yeah.
I didn't notice it when we were out there playing at all, but then again, no, small sample size.
Yeah, exactly. Well, no, you know, the other thing too is it's string raise is such a rare thing. They'd have to be either one, uneducated, or two, be an angle shooter.
Yeah.
You know, and so, and then somebody has to bring it up or catch it. So I mean, it's so hard. It's
well,
it's as rare as not flopping anything better than a pair.
Yeah, I mean, I guess what you're saying though, if it's not something that's ever enforced, then maybe you never learn either. So I mean,
that's true too.
You know, you don't get that education. I mean, a lot of this etiquette stuff, our education comes from making the mistake at the table.
Right.
You know, and if it's not a quote unquote mistake there, you're never going to learn. So. But very interesting. This is the most interesting call to floor we've got in a while. I mean, it's certainly not controversial, but just very interesting to hear that this happens.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, after we both wrote Jeff back, then we get it from Jody, and we're like, all right. And to Jody's credit on this too, this is what I love about Jody. He it took him a while to answer this one because he said he wanted to. Survey some other managers, and this is a good one to do it. I mean, he has his opinion on how it would happen in his room, but you know, he wanted to go that extra step and see whether that's how it's done in other places. So
very good. What does he win?
Two winners here. All right, Jeff, we're gonna be happy to send you a grinder bracelet from Pro Poker Gear, which sells much more than terrific bracelets for home games and leagues, including hats, t-shirts, and gifts in the AnteUp store at anteupstore.com.
Got a little housekeeping. Scott's hitting the road again. I unfortunately am not. Actually, no, fortunately, because, you know, on the road is rough for me. You know, Scott snores. It's not easy. But he's going on the road. Where are you going?
All right. We're going to be looking to do AnteUp meetups in Atlantic City on either April 2nd or 3rd, Minneapolis on May 27th, Chicago on May 29th, and, of course, Chris will be joining me in Vegas for the week of June 25th. We'll, of course, announce more details once they're finalized, but at least want to save the dates on your calendars. So you don't plan, you know, some kind of, you know, boring thing like going to the beach or something that night.
So yesterday my phone rings, and I'm like, Annie up, it's Chris. And he goes, Yeah, my name's Joe, and you may remember me. I was on your show a couple of times, and I, you know, I contributed a story to your magazine every once in a while. I'm like, Joe Navarro! He's like, hey, buddy, how's it going? I said, good, what's up with you? He says, well, I'm back to live teaching. He says he's going to do a TELL seminar for the revamped World Series of Poker Academy down at Seminole Hard Rock Hollywood on March 26th. So he wanted us to let everybody know. Because, you know, whenever he's on, we just get flooded with emails and everything, and easily one of the most read things in our magazine. So you can get more details at WSOPAcademyLive.com, March 26th, Seminole Hard Rock Hollywood. If you're down there and you want to catch him, that's where we'll be.
And, you know, we've said this a million times on the show. What a class guy. You know,
oh, yeah.
I was emailing him back and forth about this, and I was telling him, you know, hey, glad to see you're back doing stuff, and wish I could be there, but I'm going to be in Washington. It's my birthday, and we're going to be doing all the sites up there, my little niece and nephew. And I'm like, you know what? Hey, my nephew, he's really, really bummed that they no longer do tours at the FBI headquarters. Did you know this?
No.
Freaking terrorists are winning, Chris.
Oh, man.
So no more tours of the FBI headquarters, and I'm like, you know, I just mentioned to him, because, you know, obviously he's a former FBI agent, and he's going to hook my my nephew up with a little FBI pin. He's going to love it.
Oh, cool. Now, he's the one that likes, like, the presidents and stuff, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
He's totally going to soak up everything in D.C. So.
Awesome.
Yeah, but Joe's a great guy, so
yeah,
go
absolutely.
Down and see him live at the Hard Rock on March 26th.
Who do you want to play against, Scott?
You know what? I thought I was getting close to my list. You know, I haven't really been writing it down, but I've been thinking about it because I know next week on the show we're going to be doing this. And I got to say, we just got a phenomenal response from one of our listeners this week. And I have to rethink my whole list.
Oh, man.
It was not funny enough.
But doesn't it have to be a little bit of truth to it, too? Does it have to be comical?
Some truth to it, but and I don't want to say it's just because it has to be, you know, we're not trying to be live at the improv with this list, but I was just thinking, you know, hey, I'd like to play against Martin Luther King or something like that, you know, just for the fun of it. But this guy actually had some good cross-references in him that were both historical and funny, so he obviously put more thought into it than I was planning to, so I thank him already. For pushing me from my B game to my A game.
So. All right, well, I'll be Martin and you can be Lewis when we're doing this, because I'm going to take it pretty seriously, I think. There are some people that I really want to play against, so I'm going to take it seriously.
All right, there's nothing wrong with that. Yeah, we have no rules on this, remember? Living or dead, real or fictional.
Yeah.
You want to play against Yosemite Sam? Play against Yosemite Sam.
I want to see if he really pulls out the sidearms and threatens to blow my head off or have an aces up.
You know, it's funny too. Is you know, part of this trip, I'm doing Minneapolis, Chicago. The wife and I are gonna drive over to Deadwood, and we were watching a little History Channel special on it the other day. You know, get all ramped up for it, and they have you know, these cheesy recreations of Wild Bill Hickok getting his, you know, a cap in his ass. You know.
Yeah.
And so I wonder, that would be a way to do it. Maybe they have some kind of contest where you get to be Wild Bill Hickok for a day. In the actual spot, and then get shot with your mates.
With a paintball thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, of course, yeah. We don't want to, you know. That'd be a sucky contest if he actually died and stuff. Got to live to tell the story, and it's all for tourism, right? You know.
Well, like Scott said, it'll probably be next week's show, so if you want to be included or have a chance to be included, email us at podcast@annieupmagazine.com, or you can post in the forum and we might pick your stuff. So next week we're going to finally get that thing off the ground.
And of course, in case you haven't heard, I don't know how you haven't, but we've got three great cruises coming this year. We are a week away from our Tampa cruise, still taking bookings, still got people calling, and I'm still getting them on. It's really cool. So that's obviously next week, so
March 17th.
Get your plane tickets now. And then, of course, you get more time to book the August 27th one out of Port Canaveral. And remember, they're doing some great giveaways at Suncoast Casino in Las Vegas. And we'll be announcing several more rooms here shortly, I imagine. And then, of course, November 10th out of Baltimore. So join us on one of those cruises.
Very good. All right. Let's see what's on the Annie Up News Desk.
The World Series of Poker has announced the current top 100 list of players eligible to buy into this year's World Series National Championship, with Michael Grinder Mizrachi at the top of the list, 100 players win automatic bids based on winning circuit events, doing the best overall at individual stops, or earning the most points overall in this year's circuit events. But the 100 players who have the most success in the past 2 years of the World Series, World Series of Poker Europe events will be able to buy into the $1 million prize pool event for $10,000.
Wow.
Trying to make that as brief as I could.
Is that weak, or am I just overthinking it?
You know, I don't know if I'd say weak, but I know what you're getting at. And when I read that, I'm like, hey, all right, so these players win, we're throwing $1 million in. Oh, by the way, we're going to grant you 100 players the option of giving us $10,000 to play.
That'll cover the million right there. Not that they're, it's obviously added, but I'm just saying it's weird.
And they're putting on it is, you know, now you're not just playing against weekend warriors that did really well at circuit events. Now you're playing against the Michael Mizrakis of the world.
Yeah.
Well, Zeus, really testing your ability.
All right, the Bicycle Casino has debuted a new TV show called Celebrity Poker Live, featuring athletes, movie stars, comedians, and musicians competing on the felt. Sort of a natural progression, I think, from their Live at the Bike, too. I mean, they're just having famous people.
Yeah. You
know, so, makes sense. Sounds like a good idea.
Yep. And I wonder how different it'll be. I mean, I want our LA group to, because I think it's just airing in the LA market, including actually is airing in Spanish. As well, too, so it's just kind of different. But I'll be interested in the folks out there that can watch it. Let us know what they think about it, because I wonder how different it's going to be from, you know, Celebrity Poker Showdown and some of those other...
Yeah.
Didn't the World Poker Tour do some kind of celebrity show, too, for a while?
I don't know. Oh, no, did they? I remember they did the
maybe
one
like
where
a couple episodes or something.
Oh, right? I don't know. Yeah. Maybe. I don't remember that, but whatever.
All right, and finally, a 98-year-old woman in Cyprus. 98 years old, Chris.
Man.
I'm going to be happy if I make it to 68. But a 98-year-old woman in Cyprus no longer needs a legal defense fund after authorities decided to drop charges against her and about 40 of her friends detained recently when police raided their weekly poker and bridge game.
Oh, my God. That's hilarious. Like, what were you hoping to get out of arresting a 98-year-old woman anyway? You know, we're going to make her do 8 days in prison because she'll die before... I mean, what the hell?
Hello! I guess that's what I was thinking. I was like, I mean, I'm not advocating that we look the other way when people were breaking any laws, but come on. I mean, what is this, like Commissioner Gordon looking for a press conference here? Hey, the citizens of Gotham are safe today. That 90-year-old Mabel is not out there... check raising for 25 cents.
We've brought down the dark old knight.
I mean, come on, really.
She's behind bars. That's pretty sad.
You know. Again, I'm not trying to tell our hardworking law enforcement officers how to do their job, because I certainly respect them out there on the streets. But there's got to be some kind of common sense out there, isn't there?
I know. It's like, you know, break it up, Granny. Break it up. Don't do this again. We don't want to come back.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, hey, are you guys playing for money here? Wink, wink.
Although 40 of her friends, I mean, those 40 people might have been, you know, our age or something, and then it could have been some decent money there.
Yeah,
and
I think they're all.
She's there. You have to arrest her if they're arresting them. You know, I don't know. But even so, even if there are 80 or whatever, it's still 40 people.
You make a good point. Yeah, 40 people. It's not the Annie Up home game with six knuckleheads sitting around,
right?
Pretzels and.
That's a pretty big operation.
So, I mean, this is, you know, a little more substantial than that.
She's probably a genius. She probably said, you know what, let me run the game for you guys. I'm 98. Even if we get caught, they're not going to do anything because I'm 98.
I'll be the face of it. I'll be like, are you really going to drag a 98-year-old to the clink?
Whistler's mother on trial. You know, I mean, come on. All right, fresh out of the oven, O'Malley's move. Here we go.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week, we are seated at a $2-$5 no-limit hold'em cash game. The table we're at is a full table, but there are three people away from the table, so we're playing six-handed. We got sucked out on earlier when our flopped nut flush got rivered by a full house and we've lost over half of our starting stack. We now sit at 175 when this hand begins. The under-the-gun player, who is the one that sucked out on us earlier, makes it $20 to go, the standard raise. He is a laggy and will play any two cards from any position. The two players in between us fold, and we look down at ace of clubs, king of clubs on the button. A proper raise here would be to $60, a third of our stack, and judging by the body language of the rest of the players in the hand, we're going to be heads up. So we just make the call, and the blinds fold. The pot is nearing $50 as the flop comes down, ace of diamonds, eight of clubs, five of clubs. The under-the-gun player checks to us, and we make a bet of about $35. We only have 120 left, and he's got us covered. Our opponent wastes no time in check-raising enough to put us all in. And it's decision time. Are we ahead here?
All right, it's been a long time since we devoted a show to a particular game. Too long, I think.
Way too long.
Yeah, it's funny. We just got been all kinds of, you know, good guests, and these great, you know, our listeners are suggesting five poker players you want to play with. That's fun stuff, right?
Yeah, I mean, we did a little bit with the Chinese poker. It wasn't really strategy, I guess.
That's true.
But this is, yeah, this is real, normal, everyday,
normal poker.
Garden variety poker that we want to talk about here, so...
So, we're happy to get back into it this week with an old standard five-card draw. I'll say, it's the first poker game I play. It's probably the first game most people play.
Oh, yeah.
I used to play on my old Commodore VIC-20. I think we probably mentioned that on the show before.
No, you've never mentioned the Commodore VIC-20 ever on our show.
Well, of course, are you going to tell your story about your Commodore 64 and getting wrong?
Yes.
And, yeah,
yeah.
Okay.
And my mom wanted to have some sort of thievery when I was a kid.
But today, unfortunately, it's not so easy to find five-card draw in a casino, except, of course, at the video poker bar, where it's everywhere.
Yeah.
But I think it can be a fun game to add to your home game mix. I know I certainly enjoy playing it every once in a while. We don't call it every time, but I think every couple home games, we have some fun with it.
Yeah, and I think one of the reasons is because of the sheer betting rounds of other games gets more money in the pot, more thinking and everything, whereas this one... it's really two betting rounds, and you kind of get frustrated with it because you're dealing out 500 cards to your table, and it's over in a second. You know what I mean? It's like one. You know what I mean? And then so sometimes we don't play it that way because of that. But there are ways to make it more juicy, which we're going to get into.
Yeah.
But the basics of the game, it's pretty simple. It's play with blinds like Hold'em. You have a dealer and then a small blind, a big blind, just like you normally anything else. It can be played limit, pot limit, no limit. You can even play it spread limit, I guess.
Sure, why not?
All players dealt five cards. There's a round of betting, and then the players can draw as many cards as they'd like. And it's typically a one-draw game, so after the draw, there's a final round of betting, and then you see who wins. And the thing about it is you always have to be careful if you have too many players in your home game that you don't... A lot of times a dealer has to sit out in our home game. If we have like eight players... or whatever. Sometimes you can get that many cards out if five of them want five. And,
yeah, it depends on how bad the players are.
Yeah,
and then when, four.
Exactly. But if you're playing just one draw each, typically everybody in the home game can play.
Yep.
Because there's enough cards. Because even if they all drew five, you know, you're looking at that's 80 cards. So yeah, but you got to be careful. You got to be careful. And then if it gets to the point where you do run out of cards, then you have to get the discarded cards back and shuffle them.
Shuffle or...
and then put the stub on there.
Or do a spinner!
Yeah, so anyway, that's the basics of the game. It's really pretty simple, but there are variations.
Absolutely, and I guess this is why I kind of like the five-card draw, because, you know, when we call it in the home game, it's never, all right, let's play five-card draw. It's always, let's play five-card draw, pot limit, and, you know, there might be something, other variation to it.
Yeah.
So it's a very adaptable game, so you can play it... play the same game four or five different ways. So, I mean, obviously the easiest thing to do is add a joker to the deck. That can be wild, and obviously you can, if you want to, you can specify how wild that joker can be.
Yeah, yeah. Know. Most of the time it's just to complete a straight or a flush in your hand. But some people will just make it anything they want, and you can have five aces if you're lucky, you know, or whatever. So, but most of the time it's just to complete a straight or a flush.
Yep, absolutely.
And I like we've been really... sort of venturing out and is the multi-draw where, you know, everyone knows about Deuce of Seven triple draw because we've done a show on that and we've talked about it a lot, and of course it's part of the eight game mix when we used to play on Stars.
I miss you so much.
But we kind of do the three draw a lot too now, where you're trying to make the best hand with a three draw, not just the deuce of seven angle of making the worst hand.
Right.
And then there's also single draws where you can also incorporate the other games like the deuce of seven for a single draw and make it no limit, which is how they basically do it in the World Series with their bracelets and stuff. So, yeah, there's so many variations, so many fun ways to do it. And what I like most about it is that there are no exposed cards at all.
Right.
And that's what really makes it interesting.
Because, it's a true poker game, isn't
it? Yeah, it's true poker. It's pure bluffing, and if you wanted to go that route, there's nothing to say that you don't have the hand that you say that you're playing to have, because they can't see four cards face up, you know, in a stud game or whatever. So that's one cool thing about it. But yeah, you can draw once, you can draw twice, you can draw three times, lady, whatever you want to do. but we generally, what we do too is we tend to up the antes or the blinds when we're playing it straight standard, because it's only two betting rounds and we feel like there's not enough money. You know, when we play Hold'em, if we're playing, you know, one skittle, two skittle, you know, it's not a lot of money. If you're playing limit, you know, how big is that pocket going to get? $6 or six skittles, whatever. So, so we up it to like 2-4 or something like that, just so we double it or whatever, just so we know that there might be some decent money in the pot when you're playing. So anyway, that's cool. Yeah.
That's one of the limitations of this game, too. I mean, it's a game, I think, when you introduce it in the home game, you're going to have to play it a couple of rotations and can refine it.
Right.
It's not a diamond in the rough. It's a lump of coal that you got to shave into a diamond. You have to look into it. I mean, we talk about the multiple draw. I mean, I think, you know, if you're in a game that you like to play everything limit, I think you'll find five-card draw fairly boring if you play it just one draw.
Right.
Limit, you're just not going to get much in it, so you might definitely think three draws for that. But, you know, if you're playing no limit or pot limit, you can get a pretty good pot.
Absolutely. And some other things, too, that they, which I don't know if we've actually talked about this before. We've never done it in our game, but there's always that progressive, jacks progressive, where you have to have at least a pair of jacks to open a pot.
Right.
And so, and then you have to show your jacks or better when the hand is over to prove that you had the openers, because if nobody has it, you can go literally five or six hands without somebody making jacks or better to open, and then you got this huge pot. So that's how they keep that limit, you know, if they decide to keep playing limit, that's how they get the bigger pots, because you have to have at least jacks or better to open. And by open, I mean you have to, if you're going to play the hand, you have to have that hand at least beat. So that's another way to get some money in the pot.
No, you can also do draw restrictions as well, too. We mentioned that you can draw as many as you want, but there are some variations where they limit you to drawing only three cards, or four if you happen to have an ace. You know, you just got to think about what that does for your game. You know, again, if you're playing against good players, unless you're in the blinds, you know, if you're drawing four or more,
yeah.
You're more than welcome to join the Any Up home game.
And I have to admit that growing up, that was the only way I knew how to play. I didn't know you could draw more than three, for the longest time. And then I saw something, it might have been on TV or something, where a guy had an ace, and he kept through four, and everyone's like, ha, one of a kind, we know what you have, and it has to be an ace. So it's kind of silly. Everyone knows you have an ace in your hand, so that's kind of a silly rule. But, yeah, growing up, I thought you could only draw three, so it made the game a lot less enjoyable
because
you're sitting
there
holding the jack 10 off.
You learn bad habits. And then we've never done this, but you know, we did mention obviously Mexican poker on a couple shows ago that uses a strip deck. But there are versions where you can, you know, take the eights, nines, and tens out of the deck or something like that, and it adds a whole new complexity to it.
Yeah.
And of course, if you do that, just remember that when you take those cards out, it might change the hand rankings actually, and usually that means that makes it a flush harder to get to the full house. So you need to rethink about that, or straights for that matter too.
To be honest, I don't know what beats what in those games, because I don't know how many cards you're taking out or whatever, but you better get get a really smart person in your home game to figure it out for you.
Yep.
Because if you're not that smart, you might be hurting yourself. So, you know, I'm sure we would like go to Gambit and say, alright, we're taking out all the nines and lower. What beats what? Tell us, please.
See, that'd be too easy. I would say, let's take out the nines, the fours, and the sixes. And then make one-eyed jacks wild with three aces to open.
And high spade in the hole get you a third of the pot.
You know, I'm laughing though, but this is how I learned to play poker. I mean, yeah. Obviously, I played like everybody. I learned with my grandmother and stuff, but then when I started playing with buddies, you know, high school, college, and stuff, that was the kind of crap we played.
Yeah,
and you know, every game was, you know, trying to out-wild the next one. And to the point that no one knew what they had, and at the end of the hand, everybody had seven of a kind because everything was wild. So, I mean, like everything, exercising restraint is probably good.
Yeah, you know, I always got a kick out of the people who, like, tried to make aces wild. And I'm like, hello? You're defeating the purpose. You make deuces wild because they're crap, they're useless, and they're low. So that's why you make them wild, so that you make it high, and it's less or fewer low cards in the game, you know? Oh, I want to make aces, and I want all the Broadway cards to be wild. Well, what the hell? You know, even one-eyed jacks, that's just a joke.
Well, you know, it's funny that you mentioned one-eyed jacks again, because I was giggling about this, that, you know, one of the little cliche jokes that the cruise directors do on the cruise is when the passengers come up to them and ask them, hey, what time is the midnight buffet? And you're supposed to go, ho, 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 this is midnight, isn't it? But I remember when I was first playing, and you know, people are throwing all these rules, and I'm trying to learn it. I'm like, which of the jacks are the ones with one eye? And then everybody look at me quiet, like, you know, I was like on a Jeff Hutton commercial. It's like, you know, you can look at it. If it has one eye.
It has one eye.
Oh! That makes a lot of sense. And everybody's like, oh, we got to invite Scott back.
Yeah, I had the same problem. I had a friend who was like, when's the Thanksgiving Day football game? Christmas? I don't know. And then, of course, he'd always say, no, I mean the time. I'm like, yeah, well, rephrase your question better. Well, of course, we talked about variations deuce to seven. Obviously, you've probably heard of that because of the shows that we've done on it. And way back when, I think we did that, like, even before we had the studio. Isn't that true? When we went to Times?
I remember we did one in the actual studio at the Times. But it's been the time since we did that.
Yeah, it's been a long time. But it's a low ball game, of course, where straights and flushes count against you. So you want to make 7-5-4-3 deuce for your hand as the nuts, and then you have to decide what's strong enough to continue with. But that's like the most popular 5-card draw game now, I think.
If you're going to find it anywhere live, I mean, certainly it's part of the 8-game mix now, and you know, you see it at the World Series, and certainly I imagine they play that in, you know, California. I mean, I'm trying to remember. I don't think I've actually seen a real 5-card draw game. Never live, maybe.
No, I've never seen it live. I mean, unless it was part of our fun Binions mix that time
in
Vegas. But other than that, I don't remember it either. And I do remember Mike Faso talking to Gus Hansen and asking the most popular player in the world at the time, hey, do you think 5-card draw will ever come back? To which Gus Hansen looked at him like, are you from another planet? And then said, well, there's not enough money in it. It's just two betting rounds. It's kind of boring. And then that was it. We kind of brushed this subject off. So that's probably why we don't see any poker rooms, because Gus Hansen and his, like, don't think it's worth it. But we do, damn it, so we're doing a show on it.
Absolutely. Again, it's a good mix of the home game, you know. I'm not suggesting that they bring a bracelet event back for the Commodore VIC-20. but I guess, I mean, we could throw out a little bit of strategy. I mean, every time you play a new game, you kind of want to kind of get a quick brush up on what you're going to do. And, you know, obviously, like every game, starting hands are crucial. And, like a lot of games, too, position is really big in this game.
Well, let me ask you about position, because I started to think that in regular 5-card draw, which is what we're talking about, it's not as important as it would be for, say, deuce to seven, or even single or triple draw, only because of the fact that you can literally know if you're ahead or behind somebody by the amount they're drawing in deuce to seven. Whereas in 5-card draw, if someone takes one, you don't know if they have two pair going for a flush, three of a kind with an ace kicker. You don't know what they're doing, so position doesn't mean anything in that scenario, whereas in deuce to seven, if they're taking one, you absolutely 100% know that if you have a nine made already, you're a favorite with one draw to go or whatever. So
right.
I'm thinking position is not as important in this game, but it's still good.
I think there's two thoughts. It depends on the structure you're playing. Like, for example, if it's a limit game, then yeah, I'm splashing around with everything. But if it's a pot limit or no limit, you remember, you limp in out of position, and then it gets potted and repotted, or you get caught in that. I think it's more that pre-flop, I guess you'd call it, pre-draw round, where you can get stuck for some money if you come in with a low pair out of position.
Right.
So I think it's more the betting part. You're right. Once it gets to the point where you're drawing, then the hands are relatively defined, which we'll talk about in the next section here.
And then I think the position helps with bluffing in this more than anything else, because this is where you really need to bluff. There is snowing in deuces 7 where you know you have a lot of sevens and deuces in your hand, so you know they can't have that great of a hand, so if you stay pat and just bet it the whole way, you're bluffing. But really, the real big bluffs come when it's no limit, or when it's, you know, you're in position and you know, okay, I'm just going to float this hand, and my initial investment is just an option to see what they're going to do on this hand and if I can steal it away. So if it looks like everybody's limping and it gets to me on the button, then I may consider raising. And then if I raise then, it doesn't matter what cards I have, I will watch how many they draw and then determine how strong of a hand I want to make my hand be. So that's when the position comes in play, during bluffing, I think. And it's not even so much bluffing, it's just good playing the player,
like
you wouldn't hold them.
And I think that it works the same way after the draw, too. I mean, if you are first to act after the draw and you don't have and you missed, you're certainly not going to put a bet in there because you don't know whether everybody else caught. But if you're on the button and then it checks around to you, you might think about putting a bet in there because everybody feels fairly weak. If they thought they had a good hand, they would have bet it.
Right. So it's definitely important. I just feel like it's a little more important than deuces 7. But it's definitely important.
I won't disagree with you there.
Cool.
So, you know, I said that on the button and the soft pot, I'm probably going to stick around with any pair. Depending on whether it's been raised in front of me. But generally, I kind of like the jacks are better. I mean, I think there's something to that.
Yeah, because then there's going to be a raise in front of you, and you know, you know, you don't really want to stick around with eights if somebody's got three, you know, two jacks.
But if I'm on the button and it's been limped, you know, a single pair, why not take a pull at the
three of a kind.
Yeah, three of a kind, or you never know. You could throw three away and get three aces.
It happens all the time, really. It's so weird. People are like, look, it happens at least once a home game where somebody's like, well, I kept this, but I drew this. You know, it happens almost every home game. So you never know. If it's cheap enough and you're sitting deep, why not take a shot at it? But really, for the most part, you want to have a good hand to enter a pot on these things.
Yeah, under the gun, I usually need at least two pair or better to start.
Yeah.
It's amazing, actually, and again, it's all anecdotal. I don't track it, but it's amazing how I feel that you get dealt those good hands more often than you should.
Yeah.
I mean, there'd be three or four hands that back-to-back I have trips to start or two pair to start, and it just doesn't seem like something that would happen.
I always find that when I'm playing this game that I get dealt 7-5-4-3 deuce, and I'm not playing deuce's own. And then when I'm playing deuce's 7, I get dealt ace, king, king. But, you know, that's just me.
Well, you know, and that's a good point, too. I mean, we'll talk about drawing and betting here later on. But again, there are no cards exposed. So if you're a true gambler, I think you probably really like this game.
Yeah.
Because you don't have to care what you have.
Nope.
You know, you can draw three with and keep a deuce and a tray in your hand if you want. It doesn't matter. You're just representing something. So, I mean, it all depends on how good of a poker face you have.
Yeah, and I think it's a lot more important to have this game as no limit or pot limit for that to be effective. I think for one bet, people aren't going to fold if they make any kind of a hand. So,
right.
And one thing I think we should mention is, and everyone knows this, that we're not geniuses, and we're not, you know, we don't play for a living. So if it's really important to you to learn how to play this game and introduce it to your home game or get better at it, really there's nothing better than Super System, because Mike Caro literally is the only one who wrote that chapter too. I mean, even Doyle admits it, that there's no one better than Mike Caro at Five Card Draw, and he writes an entire chapter on Five Card Draw, and then he writes an entire chapter on Five Card Draw with a Joker. And I can't remember if they're intermingled or not, but he writes literally on both games, and a lot of it's spent on tells, because there are a lot of tells with the way people arrange their cards and stuff. That's one thing I don't do. I never arrange my cards.
No, of course.
Ever. Not. As a matter of fact, I don't even hold them. I mean, I keep them down on the ground like I would with hold them down the ground, but down on the felt. And I just weed through them, find the cards I don't need, and let them go. And but if you want to learn how to play the game and learn some quality, obviously it's the greatest chapter ever written on this, and it's in Super System, the original Super System. So, but you know, I don't really know if I have like a starting hand.
No,
requirement
it's
when I play.
It's kind of a loose.
It's
thing.
Feel, right? It's more feel.
But it's oh, don't bring that up.
It's not math. It's feel.
It's a mathematical calculation. You just think it's feel. But no, as any of these games, it's the draw part that's crucial, because you have no exposed cards. So paying attention to how many cards your opponents are drawing, and I would say also whether they're paying attention to how many you're drawing.
Yeah.
Is really where you make your money in this game.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'll put out, I think, first level thinking. I'll see what you think about this too. But I think it suggests that if you're drawing one, it means you probably have a two pair or a flush or a straight draw. If you're drawing two, you probably have three of a kind or a pair with a big kicker. And drawing three usually means a pair.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, you can. The point that you can be successful in convincing something that you're drawing something other than that is that second level. But you have to know your opponents are paying attention to you doing that.
Yep.
You know, I think beginners play this, they're only focused on their hand. So that whole thing is lost on you then. If you're like, huh, I will notice I only drew two, so they must think I have three of a kind. Well, if they didn't notice it, it doesn't matter.
That's right. But also, don't be so blatant to be like, I'm taking two. You really don't want to do that either. But, yeah, I think like in our group, I think we have a savvy enough group that they'll pay attention to who's taking what. So if you're in a game like that, then, you know, use that to your benefit. Where are we on this now? I can't remember where we are.
Well, yeah, I was saying, you know, that second level, if people are noticing it, you definitely can mix up your hands. And,
yeah.
You know, I'll do that often with pairs. You know, if I've got, like, a pair of eights and I've got a king in my hand, you know, I might hold on to the king. You know, because you got the ability of maybe pairing that king in addition to the eight, but you're representing a bigger hand than you have, and if you're in position, you can make people pay for that if it's no limit or pot limit.
Right.
As you mentioned, limit, you know, you got to have the goods, at least in a single draw.
Yeah. When I play limit, if I have a pair, I'm almost always throwing three away because I want that extra chance to make that three.
Oh, absolutely!
Kind.
Yeah, you're at that point. Your hand. You can almost play that face up.
Yeah, yeah.
That's why you don't. That's why I strongly encourage you not to play a limit.
That's right.
You're never going to hear that out of Scott Long ever again.
My, how the times have changed.
Oh, and then of course the betting. A lot of the strategy in this game depends on the betting. That's what we were just talking about. You know, garden variety. Five card draw. It's totally dependent on the betting structure. If you got limit, like we mentioned. There's really no reason to slow play or get tricky. You just, you know, play by the math and try to draw the best hand and hope it holds up.
Yeah, if you're dealt a straight and you don't raise, you're silly.
Yep.
because when you stay pat, they're all going to know what you have anyway, and now you've lost a bet. So
lost the entire bet, yeah.
Yeah, so you might as well raise with it and get somebody to call and come along and at least try to out, you know, draw you or whatever. But, yeah, a lot of times that's happened where people, you know, oh, I'll just call, and they won't realize how strong my hand is. Then when you don't take any cards, it's like, dope!
Yeah,
we know you have
like
a hand.
Two betting rounds. I mean, you think about Hold'em and how many betting rounds you have. It's stud. You even get an extra one there. I mean, you really realize how important it is to squeeze every single skittle out of that pot that you can in limit. And then No Limit, I think, has its own peculiar problems. I mean, because you, again, like in No Limit Hold'em, you can literally buy pots by just overshoving.
Yeah.
So that's why I think pot limit is really the best way to play this. That's why I used to play on PokerStars all the time. I love those little $5 pot limit, five card draw tournaments. Used to love those. And because it has more strategy. I mean, you can build a pot, and then, but you don't have anybody just shoving everything in and freezing out, pre-draw.
Right.
You know, they're limited in what they can do, and it gives you a little room, maneuverability.
Well, when we play, we sometimes play at limit, but we up the antes, right? I mean, or up the blinds, whatever. I mean,
we've done that, but I still don't think it's a good game. I don't think anyone's like playing it that way.
Yeah.
So,
or at least we play at triple draw limit, so that you have three rounds of four rounds of betting.
Yeah, if you're gonna play just a single draw limit, I think you got to significantly increase the blinds. You got to make people make a decision.
Yeah,
you can't just have people sticking in with any pair and hoping they win. And you know, you got to take the bingo out of it. You got to really make people think about what they're doing.
Well, one of the things that I'm most proud of is that this is our eighth year of doing the show. I mean, we're in our eighth year, and we never even, you know, brought this up once. How do you not do a show on Five Card Draw every single week for 8 years? And finally get to it now. That's pretty damn impressive, I think. I mean, I'm not trying to toot our own horn, but how the hell did we not do this show, like, week three? I'm serious. I mean, almost everyone learns how to play poker, Five Card Draw. Of course, now that everyone knows all these different games, people, like, I taught my granddaughter how to play, you know, Deuce to Seven first. It was still a triple draw, but it was just numbers, so it's easy for her to play that game. And so I taught her that, but you know, back in the day, no one knows Deuce to Seven. My parents didn't even know what Hold'em was until 2004. Yeah. You know, because they're on the East Coast, they didn't know what Hold'em was.
Yeah, and I guess that was it. When we started the show, we were riding the wave like everybody else.
Yeah.
Was. And no one wants to go back and talk about the fundamentals or how poker got started. They just want to talk about what they're seeing on TV at that day. So
I mean, it's incredible. Almost 8 years.
Yeah.
That's incredible. We're almost a decade in, and we're finally pulling out Five Card Draw. It just goes to show you how truly desperate we are to keep the streak alive.
Oh, man.
Next week, Tiddlywinks.
But seriously, yeah. If your home games get a little boring or need a little variation, call Five Card Draw once and maybe pick a variation that works well for the group of guys or gals that you have in your game, and I think you'll have some fun.
Absolutely.
Hi, this is Team PokerStars Pro Vanessa Russo, and you are listening to the Ante Up PokerCast.
You gotta fight for your right!
Okay, we're back to play money, Chris.
Yes.
And a Poker Stars play money table at that.
I thrive at play money.
Oh, man. Okay. Longtime supporter of the show, Riley Crawford, has sent this in. And
doesn't that sound like he should have his own detective show?
Yeah, either that or he should. I don't know what it is. It's an awesome name.
It is. It's like a cowboy or a detective or just some cool name. That is like the coolest name, right?
Yeah, I'm going to put that in my little lockbox for when I enter the witness protection program. Pick my name. You could call me Riley now.
I'm going to be Studs McGraw.
Studs McGraw? That's pretty cool, yeah. Too.
And you'd be Riley Crawford.
First of all, he loves a new swag policy, so I think a lot of people do. That's why all of a sudden we're getting all these submissions. People were sitting back like, you know what? If they're not giving me Jack, I'm not sending them no more free content.
I'm not sending them no more. God, I love the double negatives there.
But now that we're giving them stuff again, that everybody's sending us in. So, this he said he played at the Poker Stars Play Money table. To 1-2. One skittle, two skittle to play money table.
Literally, one big, skittle, two skittle.
Big game.
I've got my pad and pen, so I'm ready.
All right, it's nine seated, one sitting out, so we're playing eight handed.
Okay.
And Riley says he thinks he's found the Sasquatch, Chris. It's just a check spelling, but it came up correctly.
Wow.
The Sasquatch of play money tables, loaded with fairly decent players. He says, "I know it sounds like a myth, but it's true." Anyway, I bought it for the max 400, but it lost 87 and was down to 313. I'm on the button when this hand comes up. The under-the-gun player had just joined the table and posted his big blind. He had a fresh stack of 400.
Wow. I'm licking my chops.
Absolutely, man. He could buy some lint with that. So this player min-raised to 4. And the play folds around to the two players before Riley, who both call. And they, as he said, they are solid as play money players can be. That's like, it's like I'm about as skinny as a 40-year-old guy that never leaves the house can be. All right, so those players call, and our hero looks down at ace of spades, ten of spades. He knows how to play with this crowd, right?
Yeah, he knows what he's doing.
He says there's 15 in the pot now. The min raise plus the two callers and the blinds. What will we do here?
Well, it's play money, so I shove.
Shove, leave the table, reload another table, come back, play again.
Yep, shove and watch them all fold, and if they all call, because normally when you shove, you got seven callers. So you're going to make about 2,800 on this pot right here with this ace-10 suited, because it can't lose. You know what? I like just a call here, believe it or not. I mean, I can see re-raising if you don't respect any of these people or whatever, but it's playing money, so I have a feeling they're going to come along even if you did. And it's not really a great hand. I mean, you're playing eight-handed and you're in position, and now you're likely going to be either three, four, or five-handed, I guess, maybe, if somebody else calls. But I kind of like just a call here, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I think there's two schools out there out here. I'm agreeing with you. I think at this point you got enough money in the pot that that if you hit this hand, you can extract a lot more. I mean, I think the other way of thinking about it is kind of like a button squeeze here. You've got exactly the same argument. You got a lot of dead money in there. Let's go ahead and raise and see if we can thin the field and take it. And if not, we've got a decent hand in position. But I think I'm gonna ride along here and see what the flop comes.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you though. I think that if I got a real good feel for the table and I think I could get heads up, I would do a squeeze here. But I feel like a squeeze works a lot more in real money than it does for play money. So I'm gonna call like you did.
All right, well, Riley decides to call. He says he has position, doesn't want to bloat the pot, and if I hit the flop, I could win a decent amount. He said the blinds also call, so the pot's 24. We're six-handed to the flop. And so he says maybe this isn't the Yeti of play money tables. Maybe it's the Chupacabra. Must be a check the spelling of that. I don't even know how to pronounce it. Start with pronunciation, then I'll check the spelling.
Well, we were pretty close to Miami. Isn't that where it's mostly spotted? I think it's spotted in South Florida.
What is Chupacabra? I've never heard of this.
It's the Miami version of the Yeti and the Sasquatch and Bigfoot.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's like down in Miami or something.
Wow.
I think. I don't know. I could be wrong. We'll probably get 100 emails on it, but I'm pretty sure that's what it is.
Well, whatever it is, I'm sorry, Riley. I'm not... I've got a new witness protection name now.
Chupacabra.
Maybe I'll be Chupacabra Riley. You know.
Mr. Chupacabra, here's your mail. Oh, my God.
All right. So, again, 24 in the pot, six-handed. The flop comes eight of spades, six of spades, six of clubs.
Hmm.
And get this is checked around to us, Chris.
Holy cow. That's kind of scary. Checked around... You know, generally in play money, they're not playing it aggressively because they think the best way to get money is to check raise or to just slow play. Because that's what I've encountered when I used to play money. So I'm a little cautious here, believe it or not. I know we got the nut flush draw, but we could already be drawn dead. So unless it goes 9-7 of spades. So I don't know. I mean, I guess I might put a bet out there just to see who's really got a hand here or not. And I'm in position. I guess if I was playing for real money, I would probably make a bet here of like, I don't know, 15.
15?
Something like that, 14, 15, 16. 16 maybe. It just seems weird. The min-raiser checks too?
And the blinds.
And all the blinds.
And I mean, the min-raiser.
You know, I mean, I can see the blinds checking because, you know, they got a guy who did raise ahead of them, so they want to see what he's going to do. But then when that guy doesn't take, you know, control of the hand that he took control of pre-flop, what's that saying? That he has something like a big overpair or pocket eights and he's slow playing it? The blinds and the other guy is only calling because they have a six in their hand and they want to check raise? I don't know. It's very interesting. I mean, I guess you could put out a bet and see where you stand, see if people are going to come along. But if they just call, you know, they're either on the same draw as you and you have the better one, or they have a bigger hand than you, and you're going to have to hit your hand and hope they don't have a boat. So,
yeah.
I don't know. It's pretty scary business to check around to us, but let's just put in a bet of 16 for the hell of it.
Yeah, I usually try to play against type when I have when it checks around. I like to make the bet here, so then I can disguise my hand if I actually hit my flush.
Right.
My next hand, and if not, then at least I have a chance opportunity to get the free card on the turn and get all the way to the river. Because people are worried that or think that I'm going to bet out on the turn as well too. But it's a little peculiar because, you know, we've got a paired board here. It seems to be cards that could be in the wheelhouse of our blinds. So, I mean, I hate to put a bet in here and then have it go crazy re-raise. But it might be nice to know right now what we're up against.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm with you. I'm gonna take a stab at this pot at 15, probably.
Okay.
10, 15. Well, yeah, 10. 15.
No, I'm going to bet at least 15 or 16 just because there's already 24 in the pot. 10 is...
Yeah, that's right. You're right.
Kind of inviting, so...
All right, so our hero says, flop the nut flush. Not really worried about too much about the eights or sixes or 8-6. Maybe should be.
We'll be worried about that. He's only got a draw, too. He's not the nuts yet.
He says, but it's checked to me, so there could be a monster under the bed. Wait, no, wait. Oh, time out, Riley. back up the Swamp People Village here. You gave me Sasquatch, you gave me Yeti, you gave me Chupacabra, whatever the hell that is. And now all of a sudden, it's just a monster under the bed?
Of which he said that he's not really afraid of it, but it might be there. So, which is it? Are we afraid of it, or is it not there?
I'm going to have to take some style points off my boy Riley here, man. He could have came up with, you know, Dracula under the bed or, you know, something, right? Jeff Goldblum, I don't know. All right, so he figures that he'll do a bet to try to get heads up with somebody. So he bets 20.
That's a lot.
The blinds fold, the original min raiser calls, and the other two players get out of the way.
Yeah, it's kind of scary. Yep. Now I'm definitely thinking Booberry is under the bed.
Booberry, very nice. Excellent.
Oh, my God.
Oh, the best of the cereals. He says, I'm a little bit suspicious of the min raise check call, so I'm not too crazy about this, especially since I have no idea how this guy plays. All valid concerns, I think. The min raise scared me from the beginning. I should have said this back pre-flop when we were debating whether we should calls or raise, and the min raise, I think, always a little red flag there. I mean, you got to sniff it out and find out for sure, but in play money, if somebody's min raising...
Yeah, under the gun.
Something's there.
Yeah.
All right, so the pot's now... I'm sorry, our hero says that he has 289 now. The pot's 64.
Okay.
We're heads up. The turn is a 10 of clubs. So our board now is 8 of spades, 6 of spades, 6 of clubs, 10 of clubs.
Hmm. Well, that only gets us more trouble. Now we have top pair, top kicker.
Yep.
So top two pair. And what is the under the gun?
And add to this the fact that our opponent now bets 55 to us.
Oh man! Yeah, this is scary. I'm just gonna call.
Yeah, I mean, usually when you min raise and then you're calling on a board like this, it's fairly likely aces or kings, right? You would think a big pair here, maybe.
Could be a big pair.
If that's the case, we're behind. But we picked up the 10. We got some more outs here. Though I don't know whether we can count our aces and out, so...
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, if the guy has a 6 somehow in his hand, we're going to have to hit our flush and hope it doesn't give him a boat somehow. But
right.
He could have pocket 8s, too. And just slow playing and then thinking that we have a 6 in our hand because we bet out on that flop. So now he's trying to get as much as he can out of it. But it's a good... Yeah, I'm just going to call, because I think our hand is too strong to fold here for 55.
I agree.
And then see what happens on the river. I don't want to bloat this pot any more than I have to. I want to keep it small.
Re-raise. I think we're just inviting him to re-raise us. I want to get to that.
I don't want to reopen the betting. So let's just call and see what happens.
All right, so he says, I'm thinking I'm up against the 6, but he wants us to tell him if this logic is flawed. He says, lesser players check when they have flop trips, but they would also do this with a flop full house odds. But they come to life on the turn.
Well, that's what I'm saying, is I don't feel like he has a 6 in his hand. I feel like it's an overpair or pocket 8s, just because of that reasoning, that why would he bet out now when he knows that we have the penchant for betting, and if we already bet once when it was checked around to him, if he's thinking that, you know, we might bet again, why not check to us again? Why bet out and try to scare us off to prove that he has a 6 in his hand? So if he's already taken that line of thinking, then I don't think he has a 6. I mean, I could be wrong. By him betting out, I think he's telling us that he's hoping we have a 6 now.
Yeah.
And that he has either a pocket 8s or his own 6 with an ace kicker or something. But I think that he might have a full house here. I think he might have a full house. Or at least an overpair, and he's hoping that we have an 8 or a 10.
All right, well, Riley says by all the logic he's put together here, he's thinking I'm behind, but that I also have some outs. 9 spades plus 2 tens.
Yeah.
So that's 11 outs. But if you have something like 6 of hearts, 5 of hearts, I'm only a 22% favorite to win.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to put the full house on the back burner. I mean, I'm not going to automatically think this guy's got quad sixes or a full house. I mean, I'm just not going to think that. It does feel like an overpair and that he's hoping we had ace eight or something. And now he's betting out because the 10 came, and even if he still has jacks, queens, kings, or aces, he's hoping we hit the 10 now and tens and eights or something, and he has aces and sixes. So that it feels like he's betting out not with a six, but just with a better hand than we have.
All right, well, he says, well, with the pot at 119, I have to call 55 to get there. So is this a clear fold, question mark, or is it worth a call? I think raising is out of the question because I'm pretty sure he'll just come over the top of me. All right, we've already eliminated raising.
Yeah, and I think
certainly
calling
not a clear fold, right?
I think calling's a decent play here. We have top pair, top kicker, in case he has something like nines or ace eight.
Mm-hmm.
And we have the flush draw to back it up in case this guy doesn't have the boat,
yep.
You know, the redraw. So, I mean, if you're thinking he has a boat, he's not going to bet into us, I don't think, especially since we've shown our strength of betting after the flop. So I think we could catch up if we hit the spade on the river that's not a spade that gives him a full house. So I'm going to call here and think it's a good hand to call with.
Okay. He says, this might be really bad poker. Torch me on the show if it is. I always like permission to torch people.
Yes. Flame away. Flame on.
But I call, leaving me 34 and the pot at 174.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with that.
No torching. Did exactly what we do. Because I know I'm getting bad pot odds, but I could be ahead right now, although this time I felt I was unlikely. But hey, sometimes the Barry Green sign says, math is idiotic. Getting that on a t-shirt, totally. Maybe my forum sig, too. All right, so anyway, the river is the six of hearts. So our final board is ace of spades, six of spades, six of clubs, ten of clubs, six of hearts. And our opponent immediately goes all in, which would be for our entire stack.
Brutal. Absolutely brutal. Oh, man. God. Well, I think I'm good enough to lay this down. I think I am. I think that the line of thinking that I've taken throughout this entire hand is that this guy has a... doesn't that really have a six, but he probably has a pair bigger than an eight and bigger than a ten. Now, he could have the eight and think his full house with the eight is big and good enough. I don't know, because we don't know how he plays. He just sat down. But the min raise under the gun doesn't seem like he'd have an eight in his hand or a six.
No.
It could be. It could be that he has suited connectors like Scott likes to do in min raise, but... You know, usually you do that in position. I don't feel like he has an eight or a six, so I feel like it has to be jacks or better in his hand. And I think I could let this go. I mean, I still have 130 or so left. No reason why I couldn't double that up and get back to my essentially what I've started with, maybe a little less. But what do you think? I mean, yeah, I think I can let it go.
I'm not seeing a lot of hands we can beat here. You're right. If it's a pair, it has to be. Sevens, nines.
It could be the same hand we have, something like ace 10 suited. But other than that,
yeah.
It's ace 8. Ace 8 or 9-9 are the only two hands that we beat. Basically, it's a bluff catcher.
Yep.
And I just don't know if the guy. Maybe the guy is bluffing. It is play money, but I don't think he is. And
I mean,
if
I guess he could be bluffing with like an ace king or something. I mean, I could see an ace king doing the min raise and then thinking that, you know, hey. 866, there's no way the button has that. I'm going to punish him, and then him comes, and then... I don't know. There seems to be so many ways we lose this hand, and very few that we win.
Yeah. There's only two hands that we win, and is one that we split. Everything else, that makes no sense. I mean, you know... Stone Cold Bluff. I think we're safe laying this down, and if we're wrong,
remember,
sometimes you fold the best
hand. Yeah, remember, we have no history with this guy. He just sat down at the table. It's a first hand. Do you really want to play for your stack on the first hand with the essentially top pair, top kicker?
Yeah. Tough fold, but I think we can do it.
Yeah, I mean, this one, I'm fine folding the best hand here.
Now, if I'm being honest, and it's play money, I'm calling.
Well, yeah, yeah. Well,
because,
yeah.
I mean, I have tons of play money, and oh, I can get more if I need it, although lately I've been getting
it
shit
grows on trees!
Yeah, but in real money situations or whatever, I think I'm really thinking this long and hard and letting it go.
Yeah. I mean, there are spots where you don't want to lay down the best hand. Obviously, I mean, never want to lay down the best hand, but clearly when you have a player you have no read on, and this is a situation, I'm fine folding, and if he shows me a bluff, you know, tap the table, nice hand.
Yeah, yeah.
Another hand behind that, and now I know, and I'll get that money back later on.
Yeah.
All right, so, so our hero says, I'm in agony over this decision.
Yeah, yeah.
Agony.
I mean, you could tell I felt his pain. That was just brutal.
Yes, it's only a play money table, but I like to take poker seriously and play my best to make the best decisions I can at any level I'm playing at. I take as much time as I possibly can before thinking. I think before acting, right?
Yeah.
I hope you take a lot of time for thinking. He says, if it were quads, I don't think you'd shove here. It could be an overpair, which would have me beat handily anyway. But in the end, I decide to call. And he turns over king of spades, queen of spades.
Oh, man.
For a busted flush draw and just a king high. I won a huge play money pot. Play money in parentheses. And after some harassment by my opponent for making that call, I signed off and went to bed. Neener, neener.
For a brief moment, I think on the turn, I was thinking about a flush draw. I think I said something about he might have a smaller flush draw than us, which is what we want. But I didn't think king queen.
Talk yourself into that, though, isn't it?
Yeah, I didn't think king queen of spades was going to be there at the end. And again, it's a straight bluff, and we call because it's playing money. Like I said, if playing money, I would have called too. But in real money, if it went that way, and I don't know this player that well, I think I have to lay that down. Unless I'm really deep, you know, and I want to get information on the guy, that's one thing. But he obviously wasn't deep in the situation, and would have gone essentially broke. So yeah, he would have gone broke. So. Yeah, king. That's another thing. That's, you know, it's a good play by the guy because he played it that way.
No, certainly he made it. I mean, you had to have a fairly limited hand to call, obviously by our analysis on that. I think he played it fairly beautifully. He just got unlucky that we decided to call there.
The real serendipitous thing for him is that the board played out in a way that he could do that.
Absolutely,
because min raising with king queen of spades is like. A joke to me.
Absolutely.
I mean, out of position, that's a joke.
Yep.
But the way it came down for him, it all played beautifully for him. It was like, you know, the perfect storm with George Clooney. You know,
yeah.
All the stars aligned. And
well, kudos to him for seeing an opportunity to play beyond his hand there.
Yeah, yeah. And of course, he did it in play money, so he lost. But, you know, don't bring a knife to a gunfight. but you know, yeah.
If it's all the same, I don't want to go to gunfights.
Well, if you're gonna go to one, don't show up at the OK Corral with a butter knife. You know what I'm saying?
You know, I'm not one of these kids in these high school movies. You know, hey, you know, I gotta do what I gotta do. No. I'm staying home where it's safe.
So in other words, 3 o'clock high would have been a huge flop if you were the star of the movie.
Absolutely.
You would not have fought the guy in the parking lot.
No, I would not have. No.
You'd have gone home with your tail between your legs and transferred to a different school. Nice, very nice.
All right, Riley, we appreciate you sending us your hand of the week, and we encourage everyone else to send us their hands of the week to podcast@aniamagazine.com. And you too might get something great, like we're going to give Riley today a download of the Chinese 13-card poker app for the Apple products from Smapsoft. You don't have to be a winner to enjoy this great app. You can download it yourself by visiting the iTunes store.
Well, this week we're signing off with some sad news about John Lanier. He was our online columnist and friend, and he has passed away. John was much more to us than just a columnist. He was a guest on our show. He sailed with us on our poker cruises. He played in our home game. And above all, he was easily the nicest guy you could ever meet. Stories of his good humor, intelligence, and warm personality this week prove just how much of an impact he had on all of us. We'll pay tribute to our friend at a memorial service on April 20th, which would have been his 50th birthday. We invite any of our listeners who are near the Tampa Bay area to join us that night at Lucky's Card Room at Tampa Greyhound Track for a tournament to raise money for prostate cancer awareness, and encourage the rest of the Antiup Nation to consider making a donation in John's name to a local organization dedicated to fighting the disease that took him from us far too soon. We miss you, John, and we dedicate today's episode to your memory. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.